Spirit Blade Underground, episode 387. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 387.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, I'm going to share my thoughts on the Into the Badlands premiere, which premiered on the AMC TV network this week, and I'm also going to share some thoughts on online aggression as we continue in the book of Hebrews. No Hunger Games review this week. It was just kind of a choice between that and getting some work, any work, done on Spirit Blade: A World of Shadows this week. Well, not any work, but at the end of the day, I thought, oh, you know, I could do this Into the Badlands thing. I never did get around to reviewing part one of this final Hunger Games movie, and that means to do that, I would feel like I would need to watch both of them and comment on both of them, and I just didn't have time to watch and comment on two movies this week. It was much easier to watch a 45-minute premiere and let that just kind of be the content for this week. So this episode will be a little bit more like the olden days where the show was actually about 30 minutes and I used to describe it as such. It has since expanded into, you know, normally far past 30 minutes, but today will probably be a little closer to the olden days of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. All right, let's get to it. All right, hey, I'm Peter Franson from ChristianGeekCentral.com and Spirit Blade Productions here with an uncut review of the premiere for Into the Badlands from the AMC network. Now, many years have passed since the Great Wars. Guns have been outlawed and seven barons rule the land using trained masters of martial arts called clippers to do their dirty work and advance their agendas. Sonny was found as a young boy and trained to become a clipper. Yes, you heard me right. His name is Sonny. He's now a grown man and is the most feared and effective clipper, yet secretly longs for a better life. Sonny meets a teenage boy on the run who claims to come from a city outside the Badlands, and with sudden changes in Sonny's personal life, he now has more motive than ever to question his situation and his loyalties. All right, so let's talk about the story, the script, the pacing, that kind of thing. The dialogue is not terribly intriguing. It's kind of filled with the I don't want to say filled with cliches, but it has a few, like, that pop up here and there. It's not all that terribly creative or surprising. But I do think that the story is interesting enough, and the setting is very interesting. When I saw the commercials, I thought this was going to be like another post-apocalyptic setting, similar to The Walking Dead, but maybe a little cleaner looking. This actually might be an alternate present. They refer to these great wars that happened long ago, and I'm wondering, based on the technology that's around, if those great wars took place around the time of World War I or World War II, based on the just the little bits of technology. I think we see one vehicle in the whole thing, and it's like an older vehicle from, I want to say, like the 1940s or 30s, maybe even. And there's like a really old like a Victrola type record player. So it's interesting because there doesn't seem to be any like remnants of present day technology. So I'm still interested in kind of wrapping my head around, okay, what is this setting and how is it different and how does it relate to our world, you know? And it also, I'm happy to say, has just a touch of sci-fi or supernatural. There's something going on with one of the characters that enables them to do like some incredibly awesome kung fu go into like kind of a berserker mode type thing. And clearly from the effect that they use in that character's eyes, there is something that's either of a sci-fi or supernatural nature going on that has yet to be revealed. But I was really pleased about that because even with an alternate future or alternate present timeline type of setting like this, I still like to have just a touch of the unexplained or the science fiction or supernatural fantasy or something like that to just a little bit more effectively scratch that nerd itch of mine. The story revolves around, I would say, like, or it kind of hangs on power struggles within the main Baron's family. There's the main Baron that the setting is kind of attached to has a son that's a young adult now. He's got a wife that he's kind of set aside and is like, she's just an old woman or whatever. He doesn't seem terribly interested in her, and he's actually pursuing another woman. And as a Baron, he can have as many wives as he wants. But of course, that's causing tension between him and his current wife. And issues of potential jealousy and stuff, and it even gets more complicated than that. I don't want to spoil anything, but it's clear what every character wants. It's clear there's at least something that's clear about what each character wants. All of their motives certainly have not been revealed at this point, but there's enough clear about each character's motives that you understand something that they want. Maybe not why they want it, but something that they want, and also the cost that's probably going to be associated with that, that's either going to affect them or those around them. Oftentimes, these different goals that people have, these different desires, are going to, you know, they're not compatible with at least one other character's desires, and so you know there's going to be conflict at some point as people are pursuing their goals. As I said, there are also goals that are unclear at this point. So despite having clear motives, which is important to me, I like to know what characters want so I know to be rooting for them or to be concerned when they're getting closer and closer to their goals. But despite, you know, having those things defined, which helps me to engage in the story, there's still plenty of mystery around each of the characters, plenty for the audience still to discover. I felt like there was a pretty good balance of action to story, which I was glad for because I didn't just want this like crazy martial arts, kung fu, post-apocalyptic type thing. I mean, of course, that scratches a bunch of nerd itches. But for me, I want more than just my nerd itch scratched. I want my story and character itch scratched as well when I watch a show like this. That's why, you know, I like a show like The Walking Dead so much. Not because I'm like a huge zombie fan in particular, but because it uses this geek genre backdrop to tell a very relatable human story. Similar in some ways to how the recent Battlestar Galactica series told its stories. You know, it's human drama, but yet set in a geek genre setting. So I think we're probably going to get something similar here, although I don't think it's going to have the dramatic weight and intensity of Battlestar, The Walking Dead, or certainly not Breaking Bad. It does have just a little bit of those WB sensibilities of the producers that created the show, who are the same two guys that created Smallville. There's no bad acting going on yet, as you might expect from a WB homegrown show. I mean, it's not homegrown, it's not a WB show, but you know what I mean. From guys who are known most for Smallville. There's no bad acting going on here, but neither has the material allowed anyone the opportunity to shine yet, so we're just going to we'll see, I guess, at this point is how I feel. Though my first impressions of at least the supporting cast leave me hopeful for good performances to come, if not, you know, Breaking Bad, Walking Dead caliber. I don't think we're going to see that on this show. And I think from the main character who plays Sonny, this is a guy who, he's a good, solid actor playing kind of the stoic, you know, hero, serious guy. But I don't think he probably wasn't hired for his ability to do really weighty drama and like summon emotions and tears and stuff like that. I think we're going to see that more from the supporting cast, and there's already just a little bit of hints of that in one of the supporting cast members. So I was feeling like, okay, I think there's potential for some really good dramatic performances in the supporting cast. We're not seeing that yet, but I think there's the possibility of that in the future. Let's talk about the visuals a little bit. I would describe it as a post-apocalyptic setting. It's low-tech, but they're not living in wreckage. But it does have kind of a sparse quality to it in terms of the technology that's around and just the surroundings. They're largely out on a big plantation type setting, and outside of the plantation is just lots and lots of dirt roads and fields that go for miles and miles. So it doesn't have the congested wreckage feeling of, you know, a post-apocalyptic setting, but yet it is pretty low tech. It's visually different from the drab Walking Dead setting, which I think was something they needed to do. It was a good idea. But it does have a few kind of like, it's basically got a few accent colors, like crimsons in this episode, but it's not overly colorful and like bright, and, you know, I wouldn't have been able to stomach that. I would say the costumes and the hair, they betray the kind of WB sensibilities of the former Smallville producers who created the show. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if someone were to tell me, oh yeah, the set and costume designer from the Smallville series that were brought on to do this show. Maybe not so much the set designers. I would believe that it's a different set designer, but I feel like the hair and the costumes is like, this feels like a little bit like WB. Like it doesn't feel quite, the clothes don't feel quite lived in enough, and the hair is, it feels like... it feels like the dark future with splashes of runway model influence, you know? They were making this kind of dark future story, but then they brought on, you know, the costume and makeup guy from Smallville, who's just like, you know what? I would just love a splash of color here. Oh, can I put some product in your hair, you know? It is a little bit, it's an interesting kind of blend of vibes, I should say. We'll just kind of see how that turns out. As far as relevance, you know, is there anything of moral, philosophical significance that might come to mind or spring into conversation after watching this? Maybe. I think there's maybe more potential for the future of this show than for this isolated pilot by itself. The Baron at the beginning holds up a Bible talking to young recruits who may become clippers in the future. He says, people once believed this a holy book. They believed it held the answers from a God that would save them. Boys, he says, there is no God in the Badlands. A God does not feed you, a God does not feed you or clothe you or protect you. I do. And I thought that was really interesting because it was coming from a villain. And so when you have those words that are basically saying, there is no God, I am God, then what that as an audience member tends to do is make you sympathetic toward those who would reject that idea being presented by the villain and instead say, you know what? I believe that there is a God. I believe that you're wrong. And I believe the Bible does have value. Like the Bible in this instance is the good alternative to the obvious bad guy's philosophy. Now, a brief scene later where a character is learning to read is starting by reading, I think it's the first couple sentences maybe, of Paradise Lost, which I have not read, but is a work that deals with, you know, definitely with religious themes and ideas. And so the inclusion of that may also imply future religious themes in the series. Too soon to tell, but the show has my attention in that regard. The premise itself is analogous to one of the basic claims of the Bible, you know, that we live in a broken world, but a better one waits for us if we are willing to believe that and leave this world behind. Although the analogy is missing the savior component that the Bible clearly has, unless there are future plans in this show that would place Sonny in the role of savior. You know, his origins at this point are a mystery, but hints imply that he may actually come from this outside good city that people want to get to, that's outside of the Badlands. And so if he comes from there, that would certainly have some parallels to Christ as God coming from heaven and revealing truth and providing a way for all of us to be with God where he is. Given that at least one of the producers has a Catholic background, it may not be out of the question to look for biblical metaphors in this series as it goes forward. So, I don't know. We'll see. Now, if I were a time traveler, because I have no idea what your tastes are, I'd go back in time and say, okay, Pater, you don't have cable. So just wait for now. But you know what? Buy the first season the day it comes out. It's worth an experimental purchase of the entire first season. Maybe wait till it's used. I mean, maybe don't pay more than $20 if you can avoid it, or $30, you know, to buy the first season. And then just kind of see how it goes. But it definitely seems solid enough to risk that kind of a purchase. Now, I don't like numbers, but if you do, how about a quality score of 9.0 out of 10? That would be an A-letter letter grade and a relevance score of 7.0 out of 10. That would be a C letter grade. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
Well, if you keep track of the Spirit Blade Videos channel on youtube.com/SpiritBladeVideos, then you probably know this already, but for the first time in almost 10 years of Spirit Blade Productions existing, I've set up gift codes. So now you can purchase any of our digital products for friends or family. You just go to the website and you browse to the product you're interested in, and you'll see an alternate version of that product that has gift code at the end of the name. So you just click on that, and then you pay for it, and then within 2 to 3 business days, you get like this PDF file that says, you know, it's like a gift card type looking thing. It's got a code on it, and then you pass that along to whoever you want. They can use it anytime to download the product that that you have purchased for them on our online store at spiritblade.com. So anyway, I hope that's something that you guys find useful as you consider, you know, connecting with other people, or just sharing what we're doing, or looking for a springboard for a deeper conversation. That's part of, in addition to like entertaining and just being fun for you guys. I really hope that the audio dramas that I'm producing with the help of so many people, you know, actors and others, I'm hoping that there'll be a springboard for useful conversation with others, or at the very least, solitary contemplation and thought as you listen. So if you'd like to share that experience with somebody else, go over to spiritblade.com. I figured I've been meaning to do this for like the last 3 Christmases. This time I finally got off my butt. I was like, oh, here's another Christmas coming. I got to do this. I haven't done a sale on a Christmas season sale in a while. I'm not sure if I'm going to do one this year. They're a little complicated to kind of set up and keep track of, and now we've got a new system, so I'm not sure if I'll do a sale this year. Probably not, but I thought at the very least I should put these up. And our audio dramas, I try to keep the prices as low as possible. It's like for Pilgrim's Progress, Similitude of a Dream, it's $4.99. And then the digital downloads for all of our other audio dramas, I guess both of our other audio dramas, soon to be all, when I release A World of Shadows, which is still looking like a mid-April release. But anyway, Spirit Blade Special Edition and Spirit Blade Dark Ritual, both available for just $9.99. And that's a lot less than you're going to find comparable audio dramas from other production companies. So hopefully that's a great value for you and something you guys will be interested in passing along to others. Okay, I want to remind you guys about the youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral channel, where this week you can find part 9 of the retro game live stream, in which I feature Castlevania, Aria of Sorrow, and Champions of Norrath. And then also up this week is my Into the Badlands premiere uncut review. So if you want to share those with somebody else, or you just want to help out the channel and help draw attention to it, please go over to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral and do some liking and sharing and maybe even subscribing. As a reminder, I want your voice and your interests to be a part of this podcast and Christian Geek Central. Whether you have an idea for a segment already or you just want to be a part of the fun, we want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. It's also a great way to promote what you're doing if you'd like. So for more info, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. And lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. Spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
In this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we kind of take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in scripture, just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth, and I hope that you'll do that with me. This time, we're looking at the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, and we've moved on to verse 30 now. We're kind of inching our way through this list of examples of faith throughout history that the author of Hebrews gives us, people that exhibited the kind of faith that God wants us to have in the Old Testament. And so we're going with each of these examples and highlighting them, and then also going back and refreshing our memory on, okay, so what was the story with this person or this group of people or whatever, and you know, why would the author of Hebrews maybe be pointing to them as an example of faith, and what is distinctive about how they exercised faith? So that brings us today to Hebrews chapter 11, and it's really Israel as a whole that exhibited faith in this instance. Hebrews 11:30 in the ESV says, "By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days." Now, the well-known story of the Battle of Jericho is found in the book of Joshua, chapter 6, with some contextual details beginning at chapter 5, verse 13, that I think are worth reading before you go into chapter 6. Despite being called a city in many translations, Jericho was actually a military stronghold guarding trade routes into the civilian-populated hill country. There's no archaeological evidence of a civilian population at Jericho, and the reference to men and women, young and old, that you're going to find there in, I believe it's Joshua chapter 6, that's argued by some scholars to be hyperbolic phrasing common to the time period. I won't get into that now, but for a great read, I'd highly recommend the book Is God a Moral Monster by Dr. Paul Copan, which basically deals with some of the things that just seem strange about the Old Testament or uncharacteristic of God when we compare him and how he speaks to us through Jesus in the New Testament. And it really sheds a lot of interesting light on some of those controversial things that we find in the Old Testament that maybe make us ask, boy, this seems a bit harsh, or this seems a bit intense, or this seems just plain contradictory maybe even to a good and loving God. So I highly recommend Is God a Moral Monster by Dr. Paul Copan. Anyway, despite the strong defenses and military strength of Jericho, God told Joshua, "I have given Jericho into your hand." And that's in Joshua 6, verse 2. Although the company of Israel that went along for this this encircling of Jericho, it included armed men, Israel's forces, they really had no formal combat training, and they simply circled Jericho for 6 days, and then circled it 7 times on a 7th day. Finally, they blew on trumpets and shouted loudly. Really, that's it. And then, miraculously, in response to Israel's faith, and that's the insight that the author of Hebrews gives us in Hebrews 11, verse 30, where he says, "By faith." It was specifically by faith that the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. So the author of Hebrews gives us that insight here that it's actually in response to Israel's faith that God made the fortified walls of Jericho come a-tumbling down. With the stories of military victories often a memorable part of childhood Sunday school classes, the New Testament military metaphors that describe believers as soldiers, you know, in Philippians 2:25 or 2 Timothy 2:3, or being like in full armor, we see that in Ephesians 6:11, you know. So with these military victory stories like this one with Jericho, and then these soldier and armor metaphors in the New Testament, we can mistakenly, I think, enter into a socially combative mode with others and think that we are serving God through our kind of what we see as holy aggression. Facebook, YouTube, message boards of all kinds are breeding grounds for heated disputes and even raging hatred expressed in either passive-aggressive words, and yes, we can tell you're being passive-aggressive. That's, you know, sometimes when I'm like responding to somebody and they are getting under my skin, they are just being insulting or in some way just aggravating, I will type my response. I'll actually like start usually pulling up a document on my desktop so that I can work on it there and wordsmith it there so that I don't accidentally hit send when I haven't really thought through exactly. So I do all my work so there can be no accidents on a Word document on my desktop. And then when I'm ready and finally satisfied with it, I'll copy and paste that to, you know, whatever I'm on, Facebook or email or YouTube or whatever the crap. Anyway, so that's a little tip if you find yourself sometimes getting yourself into trouble by typing off, you know, things a little too quickly. But I'll, you know, look at what I wrote and painstakingly sometimes go, "Ugh, Pater, you're trying to get a little dig in there. You got to edit that. You got to edit that out. You got to reapproach that. You got to give grace here. Undeserved favor. And it's absolutely undeserved, this person that you're dealing with here. They do not deserve favor of any kind. They are infuriatingly But anyway, you know, you can tell that, and that's why I want to try and edit that out of my language, because I can tell when other people are being passive aggressive and they think they're being, you know, coming across as polite, but they're still kind of getting a dig in, or they're kind of coming across just a little, just slightly superior, and it's like, oh man, that is just that hurts, you know, that hurts, and I don't want to be putting that out there, even when I'm hurting because of something somebody commented on or said something or whatever. So you know, when we go to Facebook or YouTube or message boards or whatever, you know, it just can be heated, and you've got passive aggressive words that are being used, or just vicious direct insults. And sometimes we find ourselves, if we're honest, among the worst of these offenders. But God's plan for his people has never been that they go out looking for a fight. And we might say to ourselves, well, I'm never looking for a fight. They started this or whatever. Well, you know, we can still contribute to kind of looking for that fight if we are just going to places where we know there are people that are going to aggravate us and push our buttons and stuff. You know, we do play a subtle part sometimes in looking for those fights, you know, and that's never been God's plan for his people to go out looking for a fight either on his behalf or their own. Israel could defend themselves when attacked, of course, but they were not to go out and look for people to destroy or conquer. They were not looking for this fight with Jericho. They got near Jericho at some point, and then God said, hey, you're near Jericho, and guess what? It's yours. I'm giving it to you. God alone was meant to select military targets, and when he did, Israel had victory. Now, by contrast, when Israel took military leadership into their own hands and selected their own targets, God allowed them to be brutally defeated. You can see examples of that in Numbers 14, verses 39 to 45, and 1 Samuel chapter 4. Now, to be clear, just in case, you know, anybody thinks that this is my line of thinking, it's not my intent to make some kind of like anti-war statement here, you know, that since they weren't looking for fights, we shouldn't, you know, fight people that are, you know, the other, you know, we shouldn't be trying to, you know, hunt down and deal with ISIS, you know, and get them out of the picture or whatever, you know, even though, you know, you could certainly make the argument that they attacked us and those we're allied with first. But, you know, I just want to remove that from the table altogether. This is not some kind of anti-war statement. In fact, I think trying to make application to our modern military organizations and ancient Israel's military activities is dangerous, because the men of Israel who went into battle, they weren't military. They weren't a military organization in the sense that we think of today. And they also had God himself as their commander. So I think we ought to make comparison and application between these apples and oranges with great caution. Now, that said, this is what I really do want to get at with this, and I think what we really can apply here, because I don't think the author of Hebrews was bringing up these examples of faith in any case as like how we ought to handle military. No, he was talking to normal people, the average person was not enrolled in, you know, the military. So this is to be applicable to all people. This example of faith is meant to be applicable to us. So I think we find that as we look at just the conflict that we face in this life, and then look at the faith modeled by Israel as they faced conflict, as they faced Jericho. I think it's a useful example to us. So you might be asking, okay, well, then what do we take from this? And specifically, what's in this for geeks, maybe? Well, Israel, as I said, wasn't looking for the fight with Jericho. And the victory they experienced was not the result of their own aggression and force. God told them the city was theirs and then instructed them to do things his way, which looked very unusual at the time. Now, it's, you know, none of us should be counting on the voice of God to intervene, but where we see that, the, you know, God's voice intervening in an example like this, I think that's where we insert, you know, the analog for me is Scripture, okay? So what we can glean and discern from Scripture will help us determine, okay, which of these battles should I actually engage in, which will actually be useful for me to engage in, and how should I approach this? You know, how can I do this God's way? You know, and that's, we're going to run into those kinds of situations and those kinds of decisions all the time. Geek fiction regularly examines and gives commentary on all kinds of ideas. You guys know this. And in response, so do many geeks online, you know? So when I run into something that mocks Jesus or mocks the Bible or just mocks some aspect of Christian belief, and I sometimes feel like responding or engaging in that conversation. But what I really want to be getting better at is discerning the difference between being useful to God's agenda and gratifying something that's going on in me. In those moments, I also want to be skilled at doing conversation God's way instead of the way that satisfies my cravings for security when I feel attacked, or dominance when I, you know, when I feel like, oh, that's such an obviously stupid idea and this person needs to be put in their place. And I'm going to do it, you know. It's God's job to put people in their place, not ours. A lot of people in Paris are in shock and despair right now. I normally don't comment on kind of like major events. It's because I'm never sure, like, you know, I don't want to neglect, you know, I don't want to set a precedent and then like neglect something that that someone might feel like, I, you know, hey, Peter, this is a big deal. You should really be commenting on this, or, you know, calling us to pray for those in Paris and elsewhere that may be suffering, you know. And so absolutely, since I am bringing it up now, I've been praying lately, Jesus, come. We need you to come. We need you to fix this mess that we are making. We are killing ourselves. Please, Jesus, come and bring your kingdom. But anyway, I just wanted to put that out there so that you guys didn't think that I'm, you know, going to start getting into current events and stuff like that. That's not really what this podcast is about. But I mean, it did come to mind as I was looking at this passage, this issue. So, you know, a lot of people, as I said, in Paris are in shock. They're in despair right now because of the ISIS attack that took so many lives. We live in a time of passionate but thoughtless extremes that are killing people, and that on another level are destroying relationships, destroying lives, maybe not killing people, but destroying lives, destroying entire countries. You know, there's nothing inherently wrong with passion, but when it's thoughtless passion and when it's not guided by truth, then it leads to just destruction and leads to suffering. So I want to ask myself, you know, when am I joining in with those extreme and thoughtless battles that are not appointed by God? And when the battles do seem to be appointed, am I remembering who the real enemy is? Because we might be looking at a person's face or at someone's username online and their, you know, their really vicious words, but are they really the enemy? You know, speaking of those soldier armor metaphors, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11 and 12, you know, it says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against what? Other people that are jerks online? The schemes of the devil. Stand against the schemes of the devil. And then he goes on to say, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities of other countries? No, against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. I also want to ask myself, am I doing battle through acts of patience and grace, undeserved favor, that cause the consciences of those against us to condemn what they're doing? Because that is very often the effect of giving someone undeserved favor when they are just trying to push your buttons and just totally, you know, and that's what they want. They want to get some kind of reaction out of you. But what if you did things in the unexpected way that God teaches us to give just ridiculously undeserved favor, so that when people watch your interaction with someone else online, they say to themselves, wow, why in the world are you being so patient and kind with this person? Because God is patient and kind with us. He has not struck us down with lightning like he should have so many times through my thoughtless words that have hurt other people. You know, we give grace because God has given grace to us. Wouldn't that be an awesome question for people to be able to ask as they look at your interaction with somebody else? Wow, what is going on with this person that they are so patient and kind. There is no passive aggression in their response to this obviously idiot of a person or whatever, you know, they might label that person as. Wow, what if as Christians we were doing that online instead of getting on our soapboxes and associating the gospel with anger? So that's a question I want to ask myself, you know. Am I doing my part to really cause their conscience to work on them instead of, you know, giving them more fuel for their rage by responding in the way their actions deserve? And can I trust God enough to wait for His timing before engaging with those against me? Sometimes, you know, you can just look at a situation and say, you know, it's not, I just look, you know, and just life experience will teach you this over time. Engaging with this person right now in this setting at this time, it is not going to be productive. There's nothing to be gained for this person or for me if I enter into this conversation with them, you know. But you'll find other times that it will be more clear just based on the wisdom that you gain over time and experience that, you know what, I think I can bring something useful to this. I think I can bring a good experience with a Christian to this person. You know, and when the time comes, can I trust God enough to do battle in those unexpected ways that He wants me to? Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind you'd like? Dang it. Okay, I changed the script. Remember, it was supposed to go better. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? Crap. Next week. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.com. Well, stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'll be sharing a review of the Arnold Schwarzenegger zombie movie Maggie with you. And then I also might do a part 4 of my bookshelf tour and also share some information about Fallout 4's Christmas music DLC. I put DLC in quotes. This may be some quote-unquote DLC that you only hear about if you stay tuned to what's going on at Christian Geek Central and on this podcast. So stay tuned next week for more on that. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for some more stuff made just for you. Thanks so much for making time for this show. My alarm's going off. I got to pick up my son. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out. I got to go. And seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
Okay, just finished up episode, I want to say 311, maybe? Yeah, 311, Unrealized Reality. If you haven't seen this one in a while, it's the one where John is kind of experimenting with wormholes. One of them opens up, he gets swallowed into it, and he meets the character Einstein, who is part of the same species as the ancients that gave John the wormhole knowledge during season one, but he's a more pure form of the species, whereas the one John encountered had been modified, as we learn in this episode, to travel to our realm. This is definitely a... Like, this kind of kicks off the rest of the arc, really for the, I want to say, I think, if I remember correctly, for the rest of the season, and therefore the rest of the series as well. I mean, it even kind of kicks into high gear what's going to be resolved in the miniseries after season 4. And that is, you know, John really coming into a more full and complete awareness of his wormhole knowledge, which he already kind of had, and that's why this one of the ancients named Einstein basically says, you're too dangerous now, because, you know, that power is just too dangerous, and all these other evil species are trying to hunt you down and stuff, and so you need to be eliminated. And over the course of the episode, basically, he allows John to survive
seemingly because John says that he's afraid of the knowledge. For most of the episode, he says he's not afraid of the knowledge. And then at the end, he comes to a point where he, you know, says that he is afraid of it. And the Einstein's like, fear is the correct answer. And now you can go, or you have the power to go, or something like that. One of the problems that I have with this episode is that it's a ton of technobabble. And which is unusual for Farscape. And you might say, well, it's not really technobabble, but it's the same in that technobabble, really, it will appeal to science to a point, but then it will throw in some speculative brands of science that are totally unproven, that they're just ideas that are out there right now that have, you know, they're just speculation, and that a good scientist would say, well, we don't know. I mean, there's, you know, there's so little data on that, you know. And one of those things is, of course, the, you know, alternate reality, multiple dimensions things, which, as I understand it, is not even something that for decades now has been considered an option among the scientific community. You might hear it still talked about among, like, pop scientists, you know, those that maybe are going on the talk show circuit. But from what I understand, that's not something that's really being pursued as a viable possibility, you know, the idea that there are multiple realities, parallel dimensions and stuff like that. That said, it's still, you know, used a lot in science fiction because it's a fun concept, you know. It's really, I think of it as a fantasy concept at this point. And I think I read somewhere at one point that actually the whole multiple realities concept was originally an idea that was proposed to explain how life could have evolved so quickly on Earth, because as evolution has been studied more, as far as like macroevolution, the idea of everything living coming from one single-celled organism, which is not something I subscribe to. I read somewhere, this could be wrong, but I read somewhere that idea was come up with as a way to explain, you know, rather than appeal to intelligent design or a creator of any kind. They're like, well, maybe it's this, you know, we're just one of many, you know, countless universes, and we're just the really lucky one that everything just lined up perfectly, even though mathematically it doesn't make any sense, you know. So anyway, blah, 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 blah. It's still a neat concept for fantasy, you know. But it's funny that you still really just see it, with very few exceptions, in the genre of science fiction, you know. But I mean, if you look at the way they're using it in science fiction, they use it like in this episode, you know, John is popping around to these different realities where, like, Dargo is mixed with Jewel, and, you know, and John is like half Scaron, and Scorpius is his half Scaron dad, but they live on Earth and they've never been to space and stuff. So all these kind of things, like, they're just crazy. And if you think about, okay, like, how would anything that remotely resembles John Crichton having his name, his personality, end up on Earth and have a similar life to the John Crichton we know as he does, but be half Scaron? That doesn't make any sense, you know? That goes way beyond, in my opinion, the realm of, like, you know, something, you know, changing in the past and events turning out differently. If the Scaron species had gotten mixed in with the human species at some point, it wouldn't result in anything remotely like John Crichton as we know him. That's just and a dad that still resembles the dad of John Crichton as we know him. You know, it's pure fantasy, and I can enjoy it that way, you know. But the problem is that the technobabble, there's a lot of things they're using. They talk about, like, you know, if events are done, have a way of restructuring themselves and blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of metaphorical, unscientific language being used. And they have to do that because, as audience members, we're not all scientists, you know. Not that scientists would, you know, necessarily give a credence to, you know, this kind of thing, this kind of concept. But I mean, there just comes a point where I'm like, you know what, this is too much metaphorical language. It's too much of you guys talking about nothing, and I'm ready for this episode to be done. What I care about is, okay, if John has experienced some kind of revelation, what does that mean for his character? At the end of this episode, he seems to have been able to will himself out of that nexus of wormholes, and he ends up orbiting Earth accidentally. Is this like a superpower that he now has, that anytime he's, like, in a wormhole he can do, or, you know? So, like, what the changes to the status quo of John's character, if any, are not explained at this point. And so that's a little bit frustrating, you know, when technobabble gets so crazy. And then also they do a little bit of, like, you know, like a 2001, A Space Odyssey, where like by the end of that movie, it's like, you know, the story as we know it is out the picture, and all that's left is the metaphor, you know, and we're just like trying to figure out, okay, well, this all means something, but the story part that we were following before doesn't make sense in this new context. It's just totally gone off the deep end, you know, and I feel like they kind of were flirting with that a little bit at the end of this, where it's like he's standing on the water at the end, and he's having this kind of epiphany Matrix moment where he can see the code or whatever, you know, and now he can control wormholes or control his destination or whatever. It seemed to evoke 2001 A Space Odyssey, and which was a lot, you know, that made sense in terms of where the story was going, just getting more and more metaphorical and nonsensical, and finally, yep, that's where you arrive at the end of 2001 A Space Odyssey. So I mean, it's an interesting episode, and where he's left off, this cliffhanger where he's orbiting Earth all by himself, who knows where Moya is, you know, it's a great, makes me really want to sit down and watch the next episode. But this episode by itself is like, it's kind of weird. It's not really one of my favorites. I remember it really as the thing that kicks off the story arc that carries through to the end of season 4, but I don't really remember it well from any other things. There was one other point of relevance, I guess, that I would want to mention. That is, you know, where John is trying to convince the alien Einstein that he's not really like this bad person. He visits an alternate reality where he's like part of the Peacekeeper program, and he's kind of a jerk and evil and stuff. And he comes back from that and he says, "That's not me," you know, and then he kind of gets in a struggle in out of desperation. He punches or kicks Einstein, who then falls over, and he says, "I'm sorry, that this isn't me either." And it reminds me of how really, you know, that we can't really say that. That is John. You know, if you do something, then in that moment, it's you, you know? Many years ago, there was a family member of mine that apologized for the way that his wife was behaving toward me, and he said, "This isn't really who she is. She doesn't really mean that." You know, I said, "You know, she does actually mean that. You know, otherwise she wouldn't have done it. You know, she was wrong to do it. She was wrong to behave that way and say that kind of thing. But I mean, she absolutely did mean it in the moment. And you can't, you know, you can't just define who you are based on all of your good moments. You know, we have to acknowledge our mess. You know, so I felt like that bit of writing and that little moment of John is kind of reflective of kind of who we naturally are. We say, "Oh, you know, this isn't me." Well, it may not be who we want to be. It may not be the vision we have of ourselves in our minds, but you know what? It is a part of who we are apart from Christ. Now, as believers, that's what we would call the flesh. That's like the remnant of the old man that is still remaining at this point, even though we are new creations. So we have to acknowledge, okay, that's my flesh, you know? But if it weren't for Christ, yes, that is a part of who we are. And anyone apart from Christ, yes, that is part of who we are. That is part of what defines us, you know. So anyway, just a couple little tidbits here. I'm not talking about the story much. I mean, I still think that you know, it was a lot of fun to see the other actors in alternate makeups and kind of doing their versions of other members of the cast of characters, you know. And once again, Claudia Black stands out to me. I think her ability to imitate the other actress's name isn't coming to me right now. I'm going to kick myself later. But the actress that plays Chiana, Claudia Black's ability to kind of imitate what she was doing with that performance is just really incredible. It stands out to me compared to all the other actors kind of doing imitations of other cast members. I feel like Claudia Black is so freaking versatile. I mean, how she did not win an Emmy for this is just a crime. That's just like, well, I've said before that, you know, as of this show and as of the failure of The Matrix Reloaded to get a special effects nomination, I've written off now both the Oscars and the Emmys. It's all political crap if Claudia Black is not getting at least nominations. So anyway, and then, you know, her ability to kind of recreate in the subtle details her taking off her helmet for the first time when John first meets her and stuff. Claudia Black's awesome. Anyway, that's it. Next time, we're going to follow through with the rest of this story with a very interesting episode, Kansas.